The International Mastermind Association is a group of like-minded individuals who have come together based on the mastermind concept espoused in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. As masterminders, we commit to coming together as a group on a regular basis for a coordination of knowledge and effort in a spirit of harmony between two or more people for the attainment of a definite purpose. We come together to share knowledge with one another, support each other in setting and achieving our goals, and hold one another accountable to what we commit to do for ourselves. We set goals in 10 areas of our lives: spiritual, family, health, financial, business, civic, personal, educational, recreational, creativity. You must have goals and plans if you are going to succeed in any endeavor. After all, successful people have plans. Napoleon Hill said, quote, education, knowledge, and influence are more powerful than any exchange of money, end quote. For more information about International Mastermind Association, visit us on the web, internationalmasterminders.com, or once again, Facebook the group, International Mastermind Association.
Good morning, everybody. This is Pegeen, and I am your host today with my co-host, who will be joining us in a few minutes. But today, we're going to be talking about Think and Grow Rich Mastermind Decision with Dr. Omakongo Dibinga. I am so excited because Omakongo, I have known him for a long time, and he's a phenomenally brilliant, exciting, interesting, creative, poetic young man, and this is going to be such a great, great call. This week, we're focusing on Decision out of the Think and Grow Rich, the original version restored and revised with Napoleon Hill, and Decision is such a powerful action step that each one of us needs to take in order to be successful. And my co-host, the magnificent Ursula and Peter, are going to, and Anne McNeil, is going to be sharing their ahas. So first let me introduce you to Ursula Odom, my magnificent co-host, the banner that helps me behind the scenes on this show. She's owner of Sula 2 Publishing. Ursula, so tell me about decision-making and the aha.
Good morning. Yes, this is a wonderful chapter. And as you mentioned, I am the CEO of Sula 2, and we make old new in everything we do, in that we will capture, preserve, and present your legacy information in any form that we can, from publishing to a live performance. I am so excited about what I'm reading. And quite frankly, I mentioned this last week, but I'm going to do it again because it still has so much power. And my aha moment came as a result of page 160. And it reads, those who reach decisions promptly and definitely know what they want and generally get it. The leaders in every walk of life decide quickly and firmly. That is the major reason why they are leaders. The world has the habit of making room for those individuals whose words and actions show that they know where they are going. And my aha came in that, okay, so if life is like an assembly line, I know what I want. And as I go through life day by day and things go around me, past me, over and under, then all I have to do, because I know what I want, is to reach on that assembly line and pull off what I want. And with that being said, I have to keep my eyes open, my ears open, and be just alert to all of the situations that exist. And if you have decided what you want, then it is all around you. And it reminds me of a conversation that I heard. It was kind of funny, but not to the person. Someone was asked something about what they wanted, and the person responded, but it was kind of not there. And the leader at that time that was asking, you know, people to ask, to say what they wanted, he looked at him and said, okay, the way it was said is a little bit strong. He said, don't tick off someone who can help you, who's in a position of power, when they ask you or open the door for you to be helped. So you have to know what you want when that door opens or when that assembly line goes by. You have to know what to pick off of that line. And so that is my aha today, is that I have decided to look at the world as an assembly line that is just offering me everything I want. And I'm just going to pick off exactly what I need to make things happen for the good of those that I serve.
I love that. Pick it off the assembly line. Everything you want is right in front of you. Love that. And Peter, you're the professor, speaker, coach, leadership guru. What's your ahas regarding this chapter and specifically this vision?
Good morning to you, Pagin, and good morning to everyone who's listening out there. I'm so excited to be here with you all today as we go over this Think and Grow Rich text once again, and we have such a great and fabulous, a distinguished guest. My name is Dr. Peter James. I am the owner of HCG Consulting Solutions. I'm a business and leadership coach, but I'm also a professor of business and entrepreneurship on top of these things. So I'm excited to be here. Pagin, you are brightening up this show today. So thank you so much for taking the lead for all this. But this text, Think and Grow Rich, which I view as one of the premier business leadership career mindset books ever to have been written. It's been written such a long time ago, but all of the themes have permeated even until 2019, especially as we even look into going to 2020. This chapter on chapter 7, decision. Wow. Just as many of the other chapters, there's so many themes and concepts and that jump off of the page to me. And the more that, if you are listening, the more that you reread this book, the more that the words jump off the page and talk to you. They permeate into your life, and they really can kind of guide you in the way that you should go, for lack of a better word. Ultimately, behind the Bible, I actually have to think that this is one of those textbooks that really has to stay with you very, very close as you progress into your career, as you progress into your business life. Some major ones that have jumped off of the page in this chapter to me as a professor, as a teacher, I really I come in contact with a lot of students, and the book talks about, Napoleon Hill talks about decision making, and it says that, especially in the first part of the chapter, that procrastination is the opposite of decision, and this is a common enemy which practically every individual must conquer. But then Napoleon Hill goes on to say as well, If you are influenced by others' opinions when you reach decisions, you will not succeed in any undertaking, much less in that of your transmuting your own desire into money. That's a big one for me that I actually provide to a lot of my clients from the perspective of, I can't tell them what to do. They have to come up with this on their own if they're truly going to be successful in their lives and in their careers for that matter. So decision-making is something that people need to really get hold of, take part in, take action on. I'm big on, yes, planning, setting goals, but these plans and goals are nothing without execution. And this decision-making chapter really goes into a lot of detail about making those decisions and taking that action. So, Pagin, it's right back to you. Thank you so much.
I love that. Take the action to make that decision. And we have also Anne McNeil, the master builder, founder of the International Mastermind Association, our fearless leader on this morning show. So, Miss Anne McNeil, I know that you have some power and messaging regarding decision.
Absolutely, absolutely. Between Ann McNeil, the master builder, helping to build stronger and better lives, and also building legacies. And one of those legacies impacts what we're doing right now today. Excuse me. When I think about this chapter and the decision-making factor for all of us, my aha is on page 160 at the bottom, where it says, definiteness of decision always requires courage, sometimes very great courage. Then it goes on to talk about the 56 men and the Declaration of Independence. And I decided years ago when I read this that I would do my own Declaration of Independence and deciding what I want and what I don't want. And I actually wrote some statements years ago which impact the reason we're on this show today. That was a decision that took courage. As I reflected on the chapter, as we're completing the chapter, and I went back and just thought about the fact that Napoleon Hill was so, I want to say smart, but strategic when you think about from chapter one, the decisions that had to be made from by Barnes and Edison and Carnegie, and even Napoleon Hill himself when he decided to say yes to Andrew Carnegie about taking 20 years of his life when Carnegie told him, I will not give you a dime, but would you be willing to take 20 years of your life and study the famous, the best, the smart, the financially rich individuals and understand and document the philosophy and the principles of success. That was a decision Napoleon Hill had to make. When you think about the 56 men and the decision that they had to make and the declaration of I call it these United, Un-United States, if you will, and the fact that they had to decide whether they would give their lives for this, I asked myself the question, what am I willing to commit to? What decision am I willing to make? And as a result of rereading this week in preparation for the show, one of the decisions that I made was I get up very early, and I can oftentimes almost sit for an hour just in meditation and prayer and everything, and I said, you know what, I've got to get more out of my morning to get more out of my day, to get more out of my week, to get more out of my month. So I made a decision to time my thoughts. So I took my timer on my phone. I itemized some things I needed to make a decision about, which I really had been procrastinating and did not want to look them in the face and have them look me back in my face because there were some things I needed to do. So I set my timer and I took one decision, took my timer, gave myself 15 minutes, made the decision and acted on that decision within the 15 minutes. And I am finding that by continuing, I just started doing this week, and I am finding just by timing my thoughts to take an action, to do something deliberate, and that came out of this decision chapter. So I am very excited, and as I continue to say, it's one thing to read the book, but when I allow the book to read me, every single chapter this go around, I am actually taking action. And this was another action that I decided to take on a daily basis just by timing myself for 15 minutes to make a decision very early in the morning. And now this is a ritual I'm adding to my day. So that's my aha moment, Pagin. Thank you.
Thank you. So I am Pagin, and I speak on leadership and business. I'm a motivational speaker in the Motivational Speaker Hall of Fame, and I speak on influence, impact, and inspiring others. I'm going to quickly say that my biggest awesome moment right now that I is on page 161, and it is one thing that I have struggled with, but recognizing also in my life that when I have done this about decision, things then start in flow. And that's this. Individuals who reach a definite decision to procure a particular job and make life pay the price they ask. They stake their economic freedom on this decision. It says here, financial independence, riches, and desirable business and professional positions are not within reach of the person who neglects or refuses to expect plan and demand these things. The process of making life pay and demanding what you want, which is what Ursula was saying when picking this opportunity, you demand, I want that beautiful place, or I want this experience, or I want that experience, and you choose it, you demand it, you receive it, and you expect it. And those times when I've wavered, when I have not made the demand, when I had not said, I am putting the line in the sand, this is what I expect, this is what I'm going for, this is what I want, of course I don't get it. If I put the line in the sand and I demand, this is what I'm going to receive, this is what I'm going to do no matter what, whether I have to go over, under, around, through, just get out of my way because we're going to have this experience happening and everybody's going to be better for it. That is my aha this morning. And with that, let's just hear what the 12 steps really are.
Number one is desire. Napoleon Hill says that everything starts with a burning desire, a compelling reason for doing what it is we do. Step two is faith, having belief in our ability to attain that which we desire. Step three is what he calls auto-suggestion. Auto-suggestion simply means being very intentional about the things that we are pouring into our thoughts, into our brains, and into our consciousness. Our brains, our minds will receive everything automatically, but we have to work extra hard to make sure that the positive things are what we are feeding ourselves, because that positive thoughts are going to turn into positive actions. Step number four is specialized knowledge. No one person knows everything, even about whatever their particular area of expertise might be. And the value of the mastermind principle is using the specialized knowledge of other people, imagination, the workshop of the mind. Everything starts with our imagination and our thoughts, the burning desire to transform those thoughts into our reality. In order to do that, we have to look at step six, which is organized planning. That is how we crystallize our desire into action, organizing ourselves. Having the thought and not acting on the thought isn't going to get us anywhere. We have the thought. We go through the organized planning to transform that thought into action. Step number seven is decision, which Napoleon Hill says is the mastery of procrastination. Napoleon Hill says that the antidote to procrastination is simply to make a decision and then move on that decision. Step eight is persistence. We have to have a sustained effort, which is induced by our faith, in order to achieve our goals. One of Napoleon Hill's books, I love even the title, 3 Feet from Goals, that those people who became rich during the gold rush in the Wild Wild West days didn't do that because they were necessarily smarter, had better information than anybody else. It's because they stayed just a little bit longer. Sometimes people left when they were just literally 3 feet from gold. So hanging in there, being persistent, is step number eight. Step number nine, the power of the mastermind, the driving force. None of us can accomplish anything on our own. Everybody, I don't care who you are, from the most prominent person to the person who might be considered the lowest on the totem pole, everybody had somebody who helped them to get to where they are. And the power of the mastermind is being able to use those influences around us, use the thought, use the knowledge, use the inspiration of other people to help us in achieving our goals. Step number 10, the mystery of sex transmutation. This title can be a little confusing, but essentially what the mystery of sex transmutation means is that we oftentimes in our society think of sex as being purely physical. It is absolutely physical. But what Napoleon Hill teaches us is that sex also has an emotional element, and that sex is the strongest of our desires. that if we can take our sexual energy, transform that into positive creative influences, it can propel us to new heights. And so we spent quite a bit of time talking about the mystery of sex, of step 10, which is sex transmutation. 11 is the subconscious mind, which Napoleon Hill tells us is the connecting link between our human mind and the infinite intelligence, the source of all thought, the source of all creativity. Conscious mind, we spent some time talking about how we use that through the influence of autosuggestion and what we're feeding into our minds. Step number 12, which is the brain, the broadcasting and receiving station of thought.
You are listening to the Blog Talk Radio program of the International Mastermind Association. We are here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web by visiting blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or join us live during the show by calling 661-554-9219. The call-in number again, 661-554-9219. If you wish to join the conversation during the live show, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also join us in the chat room or log on through your Facebook account.
Why settle for outstanding when you can be upstanding? Our guest today is Dr. Omokongo Dibinga. He is the upstander. His life's mission is to inspire all across the globe to take a stand when they witness an injustice, no matter how small or large. He is a motivational speaker, a trilingual poet, a TV talk show host, rapper, and professor of cross-cultural communication at American University. He was one of 5 international recipients out of 750,000 to win the first ever CNN iReport Spirit Award. He has received over 1 million views on CNN.com. Omokongo's writings and performances have appeared in O Magazine, as well as TV and radio, from CNN, BET, and the BBC to NPR, Music Choice, and Voice of America, millions of homes in over 150 countries. Omokongo has studied at Harvard. This man is really smart. Harvard, MIT, Princeton, Georgetown, Morehouse, and the Fletcher School, which he earned his MA in law and diplomacy. He earned his PhD in international education policy at the University of Maryland, where his dissertation centered on the global hip-hop phenomenon and Jay-Z. Omokongo has published and produced 7 books, 7 fusion music and motivational CDs, and 1 independent DVD. For more information, always go to upstanderinternational.com. It is my pleasure, my joy, to welcome the magnificent, unawesome Omokongo. Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm feisty, fearless, focused, and fun, and ready for you.
I love it. So happy to be
here.
So,
I am so happy to have you here, because we're talking about decision, and that first line of you saying, take a stand when they witness an injustice, no matter how small or large, that's a powerful decision that people have to make. And in your work, what are the things that you've been seeing? Of course, there's a lot happening in this world. What are the things that you're seeing about that decision-making to be the witness and to speak up? Can you talk about that?
Oh, most definitely. And we can just look at where we are in this country politically right now. And to me, it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. You could support President Trump. You could hate President Trump. You could be somewhere in the middle. It doesn't really matter. But so we're just talking about facts. One of the challenges that we're seeing is within the last 2 years since the last election, we see that hate crimes are up over 200%. And we see that we're seeing acts of intolerance taking place all across the country, with synagogue shootings, with church shootings, mosque shootings, school shootings are on the rise, or we're seeing more intolerance happening in the streets. And again, regardless of whether you who you think is responsible for it, because we don't need to talk about that, it's irrelevant. The fact of the matter is, what are you going to do about it? Because if these incidences of intolerance and hate are up, that means they're happening in your circles. That means they're happening in your community, maybe in conversations that you're having with people at lunch, maybe things that you're overhearing on the job, maybe things you're hearing on the streets. And so, but what are you doing about it? A lot of people decide not to decide, which is a decision. And so as Chris Cuomo said, that which you ignore, you empower. So the way it's manifesting right now in our society is that a lot of people are seeing things happen and deciding not to take any action on it. Just to say little things like, hey, that's wrong. Hey, that's disrespectful. Hey, this is America, and we're supposed to do things a little bit differently. We believe in the power of everybody. But when you don't do that, these things start to fester. These hate crimes, these assaults, this ignorance, it can't continue to be on the rise unless people are deciding to take an action. And that's why I talk about you have to be an upstander whenever you see something.
So do you think that sometimes people don't take action because of fear? You know, we always talk about that making a decision requires courage, and sometimes a really great courage. And in this time and age, do you think that people are fearful to speak up because, you know, what if I get hurt, or what if they attack me, or?
So absolutely.
And how do we help those people have the courageous ability to speak up?
No, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things we have to help people realize in terms of speaking up is that fear, as Zig Ziglar said, is, you know, false evidence appearing real. You know, most of the things we worry about won't happen. And especially, but people nowadays, especially with social media, people are afraid of becoming a hashtag. They're afraid of having something that they say, even when they try to come to the assistance of something or someone and they get it wrong. They don't want to be the person to look ignorant online. But one of the things that people have to remember is that you always have to start small. And what I mean by that is when you're fearful of it, start small in your circles. Try to reach out to people who are around you that you can have these conversations with. Start looking in literature. Start looking up videos. Start looking up, you know, other people's work that talks about the areas where you want to make a stand on. Because I don't encourage anybody to just get out there and start speaking ignorantly about things, because that's going to create bigger problems. But we all have the opportunities to educate ourselves. But are we really going to do that? When you educate yourself, you know that even if you receive backlash, you're making that decision from a point of education, from a learned perspective, and that's going to take you farther than what's ever going to happen in that particular moment.
You look at a lot at music and hip hop. Are you seeing trends happening now that are empowering, educating through song about being stronger and confident and making decisions more, moving into realms of we are who we say we are, and who we say we are is proud and strong and confident? Are you seeing trends happening within the music industry to do
to be that, to share that? Some genres better than others. You know, hip-hop is my, you know, primary music that I came up in, and I'm definitely not seeing it happen as much as I would like there. We see, you know, some pop songs, you know, different people, you know, the Taylor Swift of the world, the Demi Lovato's, you know, put out, you know, songs that are encouraging and empowering. And there are artists who do it in hip-hop as well, but I just feel like it needs to be happening at a larger level, because when you talk about music, we're obviously talking about mass media, and most people in society are educated through what they see on television and what they listen to in their music. And so people just don't read like they used to, because they have other options not to do that. And some people would prefer an audio book than prefer a physical book. Look what happened, you know, right now, you know, this past week we had that that Mueller testimony. And one of the reasons people wanted Mueller to testify because people aren't going to read the report. You know, it's like, it's
right.
448 pages. Who's going to read that? Well, get the audio version. And again, it doesn't matter what you think of the report. I'm talking about the conversation that went on relating to reading versus having to see something to believe it. And that's a serious problem as it relates to intellectual growth in our society, and I wish our artists across the board would do a better job of doing that, because a lot of people's primary form of education is through mass media.
Hi, this is Ursula Odom. I just wanted to roll back a little bit and find out more about your story and the decisions that you've made to get to be who you are. Who are some of the people that inspired you during your formative years? What are some of those decision points, defining moments in your life? How did you get to be who you are?
Well, a lot of the work that I'm doing is a product.
Let's go for a commercial, and then we want you to go to that.
Sure.
Let's just go for a commercial, and then we want that story. Ursula, thank you so much. Great question. So let's go commercial, and then take us on your journey after the commercial.
For more information about the International Mastermind Association, visit internationalmasterminders.com or on Facebook, visit the group International Mastermind Association. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, the original version restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. ISBN 1-593-30-2002. That ISBN number again, 1-593-30-2002.
So, Omokongo Ursula, our magnificent historian who looks at stories and history, thank you for the question. Go for it, Omokongo, share your story.
Well, a lot of the things that got me into the work that I'm doing now came from the indecisions of a lot of other people who witnessed a lot of the bullying that I was experiencing as a child and decided to do nothing. I guess their indecision was their decision. But growing up in Boston, Massachusetts, I experienced a lot of hate and disrespect because people were ignorant of Africa and things African, and having this African name just made me subject to a lot of intolerance, from name calling to getting physically assaulted to even dealing with teachers who would express their ignorance. And one of the things that helped me a lot, my first departure point were my parents. And my parents coming out of Congo, you know, during the times of the independence movements, and they were activists and professors. And when we started having our independence movement in the Congo, they became refugees and made their way through the United States. And they went on to do work and, you know, get 9 academic degrees, 3 PhDs, 2 from Harvard, and they taught at places like Harvard and BC. And they always told me that through education, all things are possible. But they also told me to live my life with a spirit of service, making sure that I'm helping other people. And so when I was going through my challenges in middle school, primarily, I was like, why aren't people taking what my parents said to task, you know, in terms of helping me out? And so, you know, when I was 7th grade, 8th grade, I was a suicidal kid. I didn't want to be here. You know, I was dealing with the bullying. I was dealing with growing up without a lot of money. And I was dealing with the stereotypes that are put on black men in society. I was growing up at the height of the crack epidemic, where people said that if you were black or brown, you were going to be incarcerated or dead before the age of 25. So all of those things were reasons that I could have checked out. But I decided that I didn't want to be a statistic. I decided that I was going to start changing my life. And that's when I started getting exposed to people like Maya Angelou, Nikki Giovanni, and reading their works inspired me a lot and inspired me to write my own poetry. And when I started doing that and started speaking to other kids, even when I was just a kid as a teenager, I started to see the light bulbs go off in their minds. And that's what started to make me realize that despite all of the challenges I'm going through, I can still help other people live their best life. And that's what set me on this work. So I started out in the schools and doing work in the prisons, now doing work for corporations, because at the end of the day, no matter how much money you have, we all just want to live in a society where we feel like we're being celebrated and not tolerated. And that's what my work ultimately centers around.
Wow. Celebrated, not tolerated. Thank you. And thank you, Ursula, for asking the questions. Peter, I know you had some things that you wanted to ask Omokongo, so...
Yeah. So thank you so much there, Pagina. Truly appreciate it. Omokongo, thank you for joining us this morning. Your story, your message is such an inspiration for definitely for myself, and I know for our audience as well. You do a lot of community work also in various communities, from that matter, whether it is Africa or here in the States. Can you go into any detail about any of the hot initiatives that you may have going on in your recent past that maybe the audience may need to know about that you want to make them aware of to a certain extent?
Well, one of the things that I love doing is I created something called the Upstander Leadership Institute. And one of the things I realized as I embarked on my 1 million youth campaign to inspire young people across the globe is that youth around the world, they're all the same. You know, no matter what challenges they're dealing with, you know, the challenges may be different, but the responses are the same. And so one of the things I started was an Upstander Leadership Institute where I partnered with organizations like the State Department. I've worked with Trump State Department, Obama State Department, and I've conducted my own trainings across America as well as overseas in countries like Colombia and Mali and Niger to get people to understand some of the tricks and some of the tools of the trade needed to help empower young people. Because whether they're joining a gang on the streets of D.C. or whether they're becoming a child soldier in somebody's army in Congo, the methods needed to help reach them are always the same. And so one of the things I wanted to do with that is I also wanted to just maybe, you know, encourage adults to stay engaged in the lives of young people. You have to have hands on them, you know, in a loving sense. You have to really understand what they're doing, because the second you take your eyes off of them, there are a million other eyes on them from social media and YouTube videos and all of these things. Somebody once said that, you know, the goal of when you're looking at a screen, there's like a million people or 100 engineers on the other side trying to do everything from keeping you getting off that screen. And, you know, so our kids are easily distracted, but they can be pulled into the right things to do if we teach them leadership skills at a young age. And so, you know, anybody's out there who's looking to do some of that work, I would love to partner with them, because if we can teach our young people at young ages to be leaders, we can truly change this world for the better.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, I want to, Pagin, can I ask one more question?
Hey, we're on the kitchen table. You go for it.
Awesome stuff. So one of the things that I love what you do as well is implementing hip hop into your message. How did that start? Tell us how that journey has gone and what kind of impact it's making on our young people today from your perspective again.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, when I first started, I was doing a lot of the spoken word poetry. And then what I realized, I had a nephew at the time. And what I realized when he was listening to the radio, like a lot of the stuff he was listening to, it was just not, they weren't even editing stuff out anymore. And I'm like, wow, this is a problem. So when I first started rapping as a kid, I was doing a lot of the swearing and cursing. But I realized it took me no intelligence to just swear all the time. So that's when I started doing spoken word, because you have to be more creative because you don't have a beat. But then as he started to get older, I'm like, I got to show him and other people other forms of hip hop. So I started taking songs from like Tupac and Biggie and all of that and remixing them to show people that you could rap about things without being misogynistic or anything like that or celebrating gang life. So I took Biggie's like Juicy and I would be like, it was all a dream. Credit cards living above my means. Shopping sprees with no money in the bank machines. You know, like just using that to like talk about credit card debt. You know, what? I thought I heard something. Sorry, but you know, like so when I was doing that, like that was, you know, people are like, you can do that, you can, and still sound cool. And so I just started incorporating a lot of hip hop into my work because I realized I could reach. You know, a leader has to reach people where they are.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids are not gonna watch a 3-hour PowerPoint or, you know, do anything like that. So if you can hit them with a 3-minute song that can help them take themselves to the next level, that's what I chose to do.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. I love the message and even how you're getting there. That's very awesome. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Love it. Ursula, you had such great questions. I know you had a burning question here.
Well, he was talking about teaching young people and to be leaders and what have you. And I have a lot of that going on in some things that I'm working on right now. But the thing that came to mind was this viral video that went around not too long ago and probably still is, where this father was having a conversation with his baby who could not speak yet. But that conversation was so obvious that he understood and he was engaging and he was not talking baby talk to this baby. And I've always believed that should be the way, but to see it was just incredible. So what's your thought about that age and the baby and how you start this leadership nurturing of young people?
You have to start young. I mean, I have three children now, they're 13, 10, and 4, and, reading to them while they were in the womb, was important. Talking to them, not using that, a lot of the baby talk stuff, that stereotypical baby talk, you have to start them young. My children have been always read above grade level in their schools. And when you're starting them out with reading, it's not important that you have them read the stuff you want to read. You just want them to read anything just, that they like, so they can start just getting that love of reading. And one of my biggest concerns was, in this age of multimedia and social media and all of this, could I get my kids to have the love of just sitting down with a book? Can they still get involved and engaged in that? And fortunately, my wife and I, we were able to do that with them. And, they're asking, can we go to the bookstore? Can we go to the library? So that's one thing. Another thing is, you have to, on the audio side of things and media side of things, you have to control what they're watching and what they're listening to at a young age. So many times I see, as somebody who's taught from kindergarten all the way through graduate school level, when I was teaching K to 5, and K to 8, I was so frustrated when I would see parents, dropping their kids off in the morning, listening to some of the most negative music, unedited. And, sometimes when I would go into parents' homes and they would just put their kids in front of television and, like, are you watching TV or is your TV watching the kids? And, again, some of the things they were watching were horrible. We're setting our kids up. They retain these things. So one of the things you have to do is you have to decide to be intentional about what you're going to start putting into your children's ears and minds and eyes at a very young age. And that's going to – anything can happen after that. We understand that. I mean, people are people. Kids are kids. But at least if you start them on that track, the chances that they'll be able to reach their success and become leaders and or just become their best self, which is the most important thing, is more likely to happen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I know that Ann McNeil, you have raised your million-dollar billionaire baby and your grandchild. So I come on and join us in this conversation, Ann, with Omakongo. I know that you have some information that you want to share. We're having trouble hearing you, Ann.
Yes, I'm on the phone. Can you hear me?
Oh, now we can, yeah.
Yep.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Omakongo, my question really speaks to your impact and involvement with the National Speakers Association, and how did you come about this book and the impact this book had on you the very first time? Because actually we met through Black NSA, but I'd like to have you share that experience, because I think there are a lot of people that read the book but don't allow the book to read them, and we'd like to hear your experience with the book here. Have you share that?
Yeah, most definitely. Well, I first got involved with the National Speakers Association by working with Les Brown, and Les Brown is the one who trained me in the field of motivational speaking. I was doing a lot of speaking in the community and the like, and wanted to take my speaking to different audiences. And so he really helped me with that and National Speakers. And he was the one who I first heard about with Think and Grow Rich. And, when I, as he and Willie Jolly, I started working with Willie Jolly as well, I started wanting to mimic a lot of the things that they were doing. And so whatever they said to do, I would go out and do. And so they were the ones that introduced me to Think and Grow Rich. And, when I first saw the title, I'm like, yeah, okay. But when you start really getting into it, and then I think the thing that first hit me was the relevance of the book today, though it was written so long ago. And even when we're talking about it today and we're looking at the chapters, and I'm like, this really could be written right now. So when you come across something that is truly timeless, you just have to savor it. You got to absorb it. You got to suck it in to the best of your ability. And so for me, the things that really struck me and continue to strike me, just the idea, Oprah said it, more simply when she said what you think about expands, but this is what that book is all about. And so a lot of times when I have to find myself checking my thinking, I'm referring back to this book. When it's talking about auto-suggestion, when it's talking about, definite of purpose, I'm like, am I doing that? When it talks about, not making excuses, the situation with his son and, their decision to not want to raise him, in the stereotypical life of a deaf child. You know, just like the continual motivation of not just succumbing to the circumstances that are provided to you, but defining your own circumstances, that's what I need when I go to that book. And so when it reads me, I'm like, you're really talking to me right now about my career. One of the issues I've had to deal with relating to decisions. You know, when I came and started working in Washington, D.C., before I broke off into my own professional career as a speaker, people telling me, oh, this is D.C. You need to cut your hair. You need to go suit and tie. You need to do this. You need to do that. And that was a really trying time for me, but I decided that I was going to be my authentic self. And this book was one of the ones that helped me. And this was one of the books that helped me stay involved in the National Speakers Association for over a decade, because I'm surrounded by other people who are focused on being their authentic self and are focused on really making decisions that are going to help them in their community. And I don't think many of us could do it without this book or a similar book, but for me, this one is primary, as it is for so many of us.
Oh, my gosh. You just reminded me, Omakongo, of a conversation you and I had 8 years ago, at least. And we were talking about authenticity, and you know, me and my rhinestones and my punky hair and my attitude, and you know, we had this like, and the conversation we had, I don't know if you remember, was about, oh my gosh, is it ever going to get easier and better? Are we going to find the path?
I remember. I remember.
And the, you know, and the thing that you're just saying now, and certainly based on what we just say here about this decision, that last line of, unless you definitely decide to organize them into a plan of action, unless you pursue that plan with persistence, that's really what the key is, you know. So I'm proud of you that you have kept on, keeping on, keeping on, persistence and seeing and going through the ups, downs, overs, and unders to be where you're at. So I appreciate that so much. Let's go to a commercial right now. So then we're going to come back to some final roundtable ahas, and we'll talk about the Think and Grow Rich Annual Accountability Meeting.
You are listening to the Blog Talk Radio program of the International Mastermind Association. We are here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web by visiting blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or join us live during the show by calling 661-554-9219. The call-in number again, 661-554-9219. If you wish to join the conversation during the live show, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also join us in the chat room or log on through your Facebook account.
Okay. Ann McNeil, talk to us about the Think and Grow Rich Annual Accountability Meeting?
Absolutely, Pekin. One of the reasons this annual meeting concept was created speaks again to the decision to impact my own life in writing a strategic plan for every area of my life. Those areas include spiritual, financial, family, health, education, business and my career, personal development, recreation, creativity, and civic. And I actually set goals for 6 months, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, and right now, this year, I am in my 40th year. And when I began this process a long time ago, as a part of our mastermind group, we used to meet on an annual basis. Small group, 10, then 20, then 30, then 40, and it jumped to 100. And what we would do on an annual basis is we would hold each other accountable for what we said we would do in our lives. And so what we need to do is, when you think about your particular life, when do you get off the treadmill of life? As I sit and I listen to what Omokongo is saying, and when I think about everything we're talking about in the book and being accountable, not just for our own lives, but for the lives of those who are around us, our brothers, our sisters, and different people that we are associated with, when you think about who's holding us accountable, like you said, for these decisions. And so this annual meeting is hosted by the International Mastermind Association, focusing on the Think and Grow Rich set of principles and processes. But we ask everybody, bring your life in writing and share with each other what you said you were going to do, whether or not you did it or not, and what you're planning on doing, whether it's just for a month. I like to associate it with, I call it like a tribunal. So just imagine if you had to go before a tribunal at the beginning of every year, and that tribunal gets to decide whether or not you get an additional 365 days based upon the last 365 days you had to do what you said you were going to do. If you didn't do it last year, what makes us think you're going to do it this year? And so just that thought in mind is the spirit and the intent of this event. It's open for families, for individuals, and we have a full day of just sharing and being held accountable to each other. So that is the idea and the intent behind our annual meeting of accountability, focusing on the Think and Grow Rich principles for every area of our life. So it's a little lengthy today, but I just wanted to just share that because we have a lot of people listening for the very first time, and we come to the Embassy Suites Hotel in Boca Raton on the first Saturday of January every year. The Embassy
January
Suites 5th. In Boca Raton, yes. And it's an amazing day. We have a lot of family, friends, but just also we actually check in the night before, and some people come the day before if you want to go into more in-depth, but that's another subject for another day. But I just want to share that each time we have this, because it's phenomenal. So that's it for that event.
So just know, everybody, it's January 5th, 2019 in Boca Raton, Florida. You go to internationalmasterminders.com to find more information. This is a powerful tool for all of you, and thank you, Anne. I appreciate it. Wow, time is flying. Omokongo, I'm loving you. So let's just go some ahas, some final round tables. We're all at the kitchen table. Peter, what's your final ahas over here? And then we're going to go to the audience and see if they have any questions.
Yeah, Omokongo, thank you so much for joining us today again. Again, thank you enough. You're truly an inspiration to everyone who is listening. My biggest aha relative to your story, relative to your journey, you know, as I mentioned in this chapter on decision, you know, I mentioned that indecision is a habit which usually begins in youth, and this habit takes on permanency as a youth goes through grade school, high school, and even through college without the definiteness of purpose. And this is page 159 of the Think and Grow Rich. And what I gleaned from you is that once you saw the injustices, once you saw what was going on around you, you took action. And I think that's so huge from a personal perspective, from a career perspective, from a business perspective. So many times I hear people just talk about what's wrong or talk about what they're going to do or talk about their idea, but it takes, you know, almost an act of God to take them to have them take action. But you have seen the master of that as well. So kudos to you for that, and keep up the good work and stay in touch with us for
sure
as well.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Ursula.
Thank you. Omokongo, it's been wonderful hearing your story. And the thing that stuck out for me was when you said, be informed. Yes, all of us can have a voice and all of us can speak up in the face of adversity or things that we're not happy about. But before you do, make sure that you have your facts ready and that you have the background. So I'm glad that you said that. And then when we apply this to the fact that we're talking about decisions, we can decide that this is an issue or whatever issue that you want to wrap your brain around, that that's the one that you're going to inform yourself about so that you can be in a position to respond appropriately when the opportunity presents itself. So thank you very much for the inspiration and the focus on how to position ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Ken.
Absolutely. And for me, Omakongo, it was the decision to be my authentic self. And listening to your story, and I've heard you many times, and I loved your presentation you did on the stage at NSA as a keynoter and just giving us, you know, a lot of information about many decisions you've made. And so one of the decisions I am coming out of this conversation with an impact you're having on me today is when you talk about local, many of us have city, county, school board meetings in our local area where we see injustices, and all we have to do is go down, take that microphone as a taxpayer and express our concerns over and over and over again. Those programs are televised. And I used to do that many years ago when I formed this organization called the National Association of Black Women in Construction, being my authentic self. That's what I am. I'm a black woman in construction. But listening to you today and the energy and the passion behind your words, it just reminds me that I've allowed that to fall off. And so you challenged me and you've challenged all of us. And I want to encourage you to continue to challenge us, because sometimes we get weary and well-doing. That's number one. But also we get busy with the busyness of life on that treadmill, just like that little thing that goes around and around and around. And so my commitment today and the decision that I'm making, I'll put this on my little timer, my 15 minutes, tomorrow morning when I do my journaling, and that is for me to decide what action am I going to take from what I'm hearing today in local politics to speak up about the injustices that I see in my industry as a contractor and as a black woman in construction. So that's my aha, and I'm sticking to it. Back to you, Patina.
Love it, love it.
So what I walked away listening to you was how solution-focused you were, I can get riled up and I can get feisty about things. And what I'm hearing in your voice is a peace and a calm and a clarity of solution-based, so that we can speak to those when we stand up and speak. It doesn't always have to be, you know, with a fist and anger and upset, but it can be with a place of peace and love and understanding that you're a hurt individual, which is why you're saying what you're saying. You're confused, you know, you don't understand my experience and I don't understand yours, and I could come from a place of compassion towards it. I really appreciate how you have always come from that place and always come from how can I be compassionate and understand and help others find a solution. So thank you so much for what you're sharing. Anybody that's listening to us right now, if you'd like to ask a question of Omakongo, if you'd like to share something, this is a great time for you to just press 1 so that Ursula can see your hand raised, or you can share your insights and information. I want to just share, while we're waiting for people to raise their hands and participate with us, I wanted to ask you one really short, if there was a line or a song, or a line of a song or a line of your poetry that you would want people to experience of you right now, would you be willing to share one of those, like a line or a short snippet with us?
Sure, absolutely. The chosen few are the few who chose to step up to open doors tightly closed. So you call yourself a leader, but what does that mean? getting green, turning green, madly running your team, sadly killing the dreams of a hopeful teen, madly willing your ideas, not even listening. I would share that because I think it speaks to the importance of just of taking everybody into account and understand what also is talked about in this chapter, the importance of doing more listening than you do talking.
I love it. When I was a kindergarten teacher and a nursery school teacher, I worked with children of gangs. And a lot of them didn't know the alphabet, and we're going back many, 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 many years ago. But I had to take a rap song that was hot back then to help them learn the alphabet. And so I had done hip hop, the hibbit, hip hip hop, and the yeah. drop, the hip, bam, bam, boogie, yeah. up to the boogie, the rhythm of the boogie to beat. A, B, C, D, yeah. E, F, G, H, I, J, K. So
yeah,
once they were able to get into it, then they got into it. And so I am so grateful that you're here. Ursula, do we have anybody that wanted to share or talk?
They're all listening this morning.
All listening. Well, all of you who are listening, I know Omotongo and everybody here is hoping that you're walking away today with a sense of purpose, a sense of I can make a difference, I can speak up, I can be an upstander, I can make a difference in this world, and that each one of you really takes the time to look at Think and Grow Rich, read the chapter on decision, and celebrate who we are in our own uniquenesses, our own special space, so that we can make this world a better place and grow and think and be rich in all aspects of our lives. We'll see you next week, 8 o'clock, Saturday morning, for another experience of Think and Grow Rich, the Mastermind. We look forward to speaking with you, being with you, and loving you. And with that, we'll see you next week.
For more information about the International Mastermind Association, visit internationalmasterminders.com or on Facebook, visit the group International Mastermind Association. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, the original version restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. ISBN 1-593-30-2002. That ISBN number again, 1-593-30-2002.